All the Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.
Welcome. We have a fantastic show today. I must say, a welcome return of Judge Jim, and of course, our very own John Bowd. What an interesting week we've had. I haven't seen anything like it ever. Even the days of John Major's very slim majority, but he had a political brain, in my opinion. And then, of course, Jim Callaghan in the mid to late 70s. But this we could actually write a film about. John Bowd and Judge Jim, take it away.
Thank you. Well, we could write a film, but nobody would believe it. Come on, you can't be serious. Try selling that to the Americans. Okay, yeah, so we're going to talk about the political coup, which I'm going to start in describing it as that, and then as we go on, we can discuss whether or not it really is a coup or not. I think, technically speaking, there's arguments that it isn't, but I'm a tad, and I'm sure all of you will understand, I'm a tad not that interested in technicalities right now, because I think it's the last thing that's of actual relevance in what's going on. But anyway, for those of you who are oblivious to what it is that we're babbling on about, a little bit of background information. Last week, the newly installed Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced he would suspend Parliament in order to get his government's Brexit legislation through, which at this stage is without doubt designed to leave the European Union with no deal. This suspension of democracy and accountability in Britain was not taken lightly by those who really actually believe in democracy. So mere hours after the announcement, the streets were alight with protests. London, Cardiff, Cambridge, Manchester, people who understand democracy and refuse to stand back while this sort of thing takes place. And this is in Manchester, interestingly enough, just after the 200th anniversary of the Peterloo massacre, no less. Since then, we've seen more demos in Leeds, Weston-super-Mare of all places, a massive weekend demo last weekend in London, and demos every evening ever since. And to my great shame, I've yet to actually go to one. I should have gone to the one last night, but I long story. This week, we've also began to see another gathering in Liverpool the other night too, which is always reliable when these sort of things. So basically, all around the country. If you want any more details about that, it's all over the internet. I will not waste your time talking about it. You can find it. There have been some arguments over, as I've said, the correct capacity of this being a coup. We'll address that as best we can this evening between myself, Dave and Jim. But let's look at how this situation functions in my mind. How it functions as a coup. So here's my view on this. The suspension of Parliament is being done solely to get a piece of legislation through, and that is for making the no-deal Brexit happen. The government know they cannot command a majority in the House of Commons and are therefore trying to overrule said House of Commons. And again, a reminder to those of you maybe not as familiar with British politics, the only really democratic house we have between the two is the House of Commons. So they're basically overriding democratic accountability in order to, and shutting down the views of any dissenting MPs. And of course, since my originally sitting down to write this show, the situation has developed a little bit in that a handful of MPs, around about 21 of them in the Conservative Party, voted against the government today and were subsequently thrown out of the party. Again, we'll come back to that later on because I have a few things to discuss about that. Now, the suspension of Parliament in question will take place over 5 weeks. This is the longest period of time since the 1930s. And just to underline this is not normal. If you pay attention to the pundit class that we have in this country, the people who chat for a living and write articles, they'll desperately try to convince you that all of this is... that's it, don't write articles. Those are good things. They write columns, which are awful. They'll try and convince you that this is normal, this is something that can happen. Okay, it may very well have some precedent within Parliament, but it is not normal behaviour. So this is also following 5 weeks of summer break. So what this basically means is that MPs are going to be unable to analyse the government's Brexit policy along with all their other duties. And up until the last couple of days, Boris Johnson had only actually faced one day of parliamentary scrutiny since he became Prime Minister. I suppose you can chalk that up now to 3 days. Also, the last 2 days, he's lost two very large important votes, so he's not looking good. We were told by Leavers that they wanted the sovereignty of Parliament back, yet they suspend it the first opportunity, so it operates with far less power than any time, while Britain was a member of the European Union. Irony is a bitch. Whether anyone likes it or not, there is a massive class dynamic to all of this too. The elite that so many of the leftovers have moaned about for years are now in full effect, and they are getting what they are looking for. This is going to involve even less rights and benefits for the likes of us, even more precarious working conditions if there's any work at all, and even less control over your own life. And if any of you out there are asking me how do you know this, well, that's because of the actors' actions and everybody involved and everything that they've actually said. Okay, if you pay attention, it's very, very obvious. If you look into who these people are sitting on the boards of, who they're friends with, who whose groups they're members of, they're not really hiding. It's very, very open. People most keen for no deal will all make money from it and make that money at our expense, shredding what little rights we have at work and creaming off the top in the process. Okay, so you need to get with the program, folks. You are working class, and these people hate you. Okay, there's nothing wrong with being working class. It's something to be, well, I'd say it is to be. I'm generally avoid the concept of pride. I've always thought it was a sin. But if there's anything to be proud of in life, it's being that. So take what you want from that. They are our enemy, and they always will be. Okay, another way that this attempt to exercise their power is calmly over-explaining to the rest of us what is taking place here. Yeah. Parliament's only shutting down for 3 days, not 5 weeks. It's you're exaggerating. You know, lots of confusion, lots of shock and misunderstanding, and acting as if all of us are the ones who are overreacting. And again, there is an aspect of class privilege here. They're basically talking down to us. And then there's other ways that we're portrayed in this. Okay, so that's I'm going to come back to the concept of traitors and et cetera and all that in a minute. So, Dave, I've started us off. Oh, sorry, Jim, or either of you. I've started us off here. Well, where do you come in on this?
Dave, if you don't mind, I'll come in on that. Yes, I just want to have I've done a bit of research before the show. And you correctly mentioned there, John, about Boris Johnson's leadership. How he was elected probably on a 39% basis of the Conservative Party membership. But these are some of the people that have donated towards his campaign as leader for the Conservative Party. And this is in Private Eye, this week's Private Eye, actually. And I'll just read the article out, and it will give you an idea of the kind of regimes that are backing this guy in running the United Kingdom. Donations to Boris Johnson's leadership campaign give a good steer as to the Prime Minister's likely attitude to the six Gulf Corporation Council countries. Expect him to extend a welcoming or begging, satirically claimed by a private eye, open hand rather than a wagging finger. According to the latest register of MPs' interests, Hazim Ben Gassim, co-chief executive and European head of Bahrain-based investment firm Investcorp, gave £25,000 to the Johnson leadership campaign. Investcorp takes money from what it calls our investor base of prime institutions and high net worth individuals in six GCC countries, namely Bahrain, Kuwait, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Oman, and the United Arab Emirates, and invests it in companies and real estates in Europe, US, and beyond. Johnson's leadership bid being partly funded by a top boss of a Gulf investment company is one more reason to expect his government to be friendly to the sheikdoms. Now, it was only a few weeks ago, wasn't it? He was criticising Jeremy Corbyn for sucking up to the mullahs of Iran. And now we find this article. And it goes on to say, and to avoid criticising human rights abuses in Yemen, where Bahrain is on the Saudi side, or elsewhere, Investcorp also has other strong Tory connections. Since last September, former Defence Secretary, remember this one, I believe was involved in a sexual harassment allegation, Sir Michael Fallon, has supplemented his MP salary with a handy £75,500 part-time gig as a member of Investcorp's advisory board. So that gives you an idea of the kind of people that are backing Boris Johnson. It's not his members of the Conservative Party. It's one of some six of the most oppressive regimes in the world backing our Prime Minister. Incredible, isn't it? Usefully, John mentioned about the UK. The trouble with the UK in terms of administration law is that it has no written constitution. Now, in all of this Brexit debate for the past 3 years, you would think that the first thing that they would talk about is how would we plug that vacuum when we come out of the EU? Because we're really, in this day and age, we're probably one of the few countries in the world that has no written constitution, bar the fact that we've been running around since World War II all over the place, putting in the convention, or what we know as the Human Rights Act, right across Europe. And we don't actually have a constitution ourselves. So that's never been discussed. What Boris has done in using the royal prerogative in suspending Parliament is, in terms of administrative law, not illegal. However, once again, having an unwritten constitution, we have a problem. But thankfully, I never thought I'd hear myself saying this, Parliament kicked it back. And they've grabbed the standing orders literally overnight and said, well, you're going nowhere. And now he's stuck for all his fluff and bluster. He's completely stuck because he can't even call a general election without going to the Labour Party and dissolving the process using the Fixed Parliament Act. And you can lay those thanks to his mate David Cameron, another Etonian. So that's what we've got at the moment. So what the Labour Party benches and opposition benches and rebel MPs are saying, you're not having even a general election, Boris, until you take a no-deal Brexit off the table, which completely destroys his appointed manifesto. So that's enough of me waffling on. Back over to you two.
Just a question for you both, and if anyone political was sitting there thinking that, you know, the argument for we want control back and we, you know, and all that stuff, I'm not being disrespectful, it's just a fact. Where is Nigel Farage? Anyone? Judge?
Nowhere to be seen at the moment. Nowhere, hasn't been heard from since the Euro elections, hasn't come up anywhere. Totally media blackout.
Yeah, I just thought this would be... people got to understand that Boris is trying to grab that UKIP, not... What do they call them? Brexit Party.
The Brexit Party.
The Brexit Party's vote. That's all it is. It's got nothing to do with our unfair social system, the sixth or fifth biggest economy with a damning UN report on poverty in the UK. It's got nothing to do with that. But he couldn't care less, and neither could his five front benchers. It's all about taking those votes from Nigel. And it's interesting... I was on a Facebook chat with MC Duke. MC Duke is a UK rapper, and he put a statement out saying hip-hoppers can't be conservative. And I made a point to him. I said, you're absolutely right, and he's right. I have yet to meet anyone in hip-hop who votes conservative. If you vote conservative, no disrespect to you. But I also made a point that our hip-hop, or our normal people, need to start bloody voting. Because this thing is round the corner. And for 63% who didn't vote in the Brexit referendum, the half-witted, illegal referendum, we got a real problem there. We got a real problem. Boys?
Yeah, sorry, on that one, I was just thinking, yo-yo, I'm marking out my territory, fiscal austerity. And, it don't really work, does it? Yeah, I mean, well, very interesting, and I think Jim's pointed this out. You know, the Brexit Party stormed the European elections, which once again, virtually no fucker actually voted in, did really, really well in these. And where have they gone? They disappeared. They're nowhere. I don't know if, like, Nigel's hanging out at Aaron Banks' house with his feet up or whatever, but we just haven't seen anything of them. And like you say, this faction of the Conservative, I mean, to be honest, the kind of factionalisation of the Conservative Party is 6-1 to me. I mean, they all voted for austerity and they've all destroyed people's lives, so I don't really give a shit what faction it is or the other. But yeah, absolutely, it seems there's one element of it, and it reminds us that the, as you say, fairly dismal referendum in the first place, which was badly organised, stupidly called, not given for any good reason, certainly not given because anyone gave a shit about the democratic decency of this country, has led us to yet another blind alley. And I do wonder, see, I'm not, you and I have discussed this before, Dave, so I'll fill everybody else in just in case. I can't remember if we discussed it on air. I'm generally not mad keen on the idea of another referendum, and the reason being because I don't think the forces that unleashed the hideous xenophobia and racism of the last one have gone away. I mean, they were all basically backed by a shit ton of money, so they could re-emerge like a many-headed beast at the drop of a hat. So I think we'd have yet more, you know, hatred in the streets, yet more violence being opened up to other people's lives, yet more abuse of people. So in that sense alone, I'm not mad keen on it. Not to mention, I think, although I myself am a Remainer, I think the majority of people that ran the Remain campaign are fucking hideous and are part of the reason that it lost. But at the same time, the original 2016 referendum campaign, or sorry, the referendum vote itself, is so deeply, deeply flawed that it just keeps causing more and more trouble every time you turn around. So can we really avoid it any longer? I don't know. What do you all think?
Well, Judge, I was going to ask, constitutionally, so if the argument is that Parliament is trying to destroy democracy, which is, I see these words on the internet. I'm not disrespecting the people that say it, so we look at words, the narrative, democracy, we want our control back, control, UK control, we want control, we want a say. Is the pilot current, Judge, is the current parliamentary procedure constitutionally correct?
Yes, everything's correct. It hurts me to say it, but even by using the royal prerogative, he can do that. But once again, he has a career of not following, thinking things through. What might happen? I mean, you go back to his career. Well, just look at his love life. I mean, he's got love children everywhere. He's got mistresses everywhere. He's got more high court injunctions than the McCanns. But if you look at his trailblazing record, just as London Mayor, that the Garden Bridge, all these projects that he launched, he never thinks anything through correctly. He doesn't read anything. He's not briefed, and he struggles. His first outing of PMQs, he decided to hoist the British flag, as I've already mentioned, accused Jeremy Corbyn of appeasing the mullahs of Iran and whatnot. But when you find evidence like this in private eye of who's backing him, what is he? But if you looked at the body language of Jeremy Corbyn on that day, he just simply knew what was coming and just let him fluster out. Constitutionally speaking, I think what his strategy was last week was that he wanted a general election in as much as he wanted the people versus Parliament. He wanted to string Parliament out by saying they're the people that are stopping you leaving the EU. Forget the homeless, forget the school children that haven't got a senior school place this year, forget the NHS, forget everything. They're the people that are stopping you from leaving Brexit, but I'm not. If you vote me in with a large enough majority, I'll guarantee waffle, waffle, waffle. And that was his strategy last week. Now what's happened is something he didn't think through. Typical Tory arrogance once again. Now, if it was me on the opposition benches, I'd say no, don't agree to a general election. Keep him boxed in now, because that's what he wants. He wants a people versus Parliament general election. Keep him boxed in now. Let him run as a minority government. Let them eat themselves further into themselves. And I would keep him in government now, because the real power is with the opposition. Keep him in government until the spring of next year.
Yeah, there's an argument there. I just like to jump in on something there quickly. I want to backing up something you've pointed out there, Jim, about it being correct, like constitutionally correct, but also it being done by someone who's just basically blustered his way into something that's, you know, correct by accident. If any of you out there, and I don't know if either of you two have, if you've ever seen the film Touch of Evil,
yeah,
if you haven't,
I strongly
recommend you check it out. Great film.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's one very important plot point in that we don't always remember, and that is that The character that Orson Welles frames is actually the person who's responsible for the crime, but he still frames him. And I always use that as a reference point sometimes in a situation like this, where, because some people will be arguing, they'll go, well, rule, you know, because a lot of conservatives like to do this. When they find a rule book they can adhere to, they like to wave it at the rest of us as if there's absolutely no other point of importance to actually bring up. And they might go, well, according to the rule book, according to the constitutional stuff, everything he's doing here is fine and perfectly acceptable. And as Jim's just pointed out, yeah, even if he were doing that, he's only done it by accident because he's such an absolute dimwit, you know, rolling around the place, acting on instinct, a bit like his friend Trump, acts on instinct rather than acts on any kind of educated, knowledgeable situation, except unlike Trump, Boris is actually quite well educated, and just kind of rolls his way into this situation. Well, that doesn't mean you're going to get a good result. And again, I refer you to my previous comment about another referendum. If it was bad to begin with, if the blood is poisoned, how do you expect to stop being sick?
Okay, we're going to go to a quick music break. Just to add to that, the only referendum we believe, or most sensible people believe, and I was scoffed at last year, the only referendum we want is a general election. Back after this.
John Bouts, John the Rage, all the on Trax FM. Trax FM.
Wonderful sounds of Ray Burrito, Deeper Shade of Soul. You may have recognised that from Carlito's Way. You're listening to John Bowd's All the Rage. It's with our welcome return to Judge Jim's and the big debate as well. I've got a funny story about, just very quickly, about radio presentation, talking, people who talk on national radio. So you now have two presenters talking absolute shite. So one will say, and this is from DJ Ivanhoe, who's here on a Monday from 7:30. He actually did this impersonation. You have two presenters saying, oh, donuts, why do they have the holes in the middle? And then you've got ones with the jam, and then they'll talk about when donuts were made and how they were made, and then they'll go, now here's Cardi B, and then the music comes on. That's the standard of a debate you get on national radio. You don't get the quality of this debate is actually it's very good and well informed. John, you were talking about traitor or traitors.
Oh, indeed. I was talking about being a traitor. I've got to say, though, just one other thing. The only thing that you've got a good example of other radio presenters, the only thing that most annoys me about that is that when they then try and turn to serious issues.
They can't do that, John. They talk about... It's like Ivan just said, he was doing a brilliant impersonation. I met him Monday, DJ Ivan. All they talk about is donuts having a hole in the middle. That's it. You know, these... what was it pop DJs? I don't know what you call them now.
Well, this is, I mean, they do have a political purpose, but I don't think they're actually aware of it. And their political purpose is to make the population as dumb as possible and chronically try and convince you that the past was somehow infinitely better than the present. There's absolutely nothing you can do to change it.
John, my belief is if you don't know what you're talking about, you shouldn't talk about it. Or exactly. if I have you on air now, I'd say, or Jim. So I didn't understand the constitutional process of Parliament, which Jim quite rightly pointed it out.
Yeah,
but I'm not going to pretend and then go, here's, I don't know, I don't know what the latest pop song is. You know, I'm not.
What I normally do is I go, now, there is an actual constitutional argument here, but I won't insult the intelligence of my listeners by explaining that to you. What that actually means is, I know perfectly well most of you aren't as smart as I am. I just haven't bothered to do my fucking homework, so you go and do it yourself.
Well, it's John, I'm very pleased for you. I'm very happy that you've quit very transparent and saying, well, look, I don't know everything. The fact of the matter is, I'm seeing everything on social media. At the moment, and I was talking to Jim today, and it's odd, John, because everyone's an expert now for some reason, and it's odd that in the 90s, the bland 90s of politics, we had 17% interest rate, we had repossessions up your arse, your neighbour would lose his house, and our social services like the hospitals and everything else was on its knees, and no one said nothing. And we're arguing over a referendum that isn't worth even having a referendum about.
Well,
I think what
we've all got to remember is that referendum was a consultative ballot. It's not legally binding. But what the real agenda behind it is a diversionary tactic. Once again, you see, we've got no money. Well, we have, but there's always money for bombs. But we've got no war to have right now, but we will have soon. So we'll use this as a diversionary tactic away from the homeless crisis, NHS, education crisis, public services crisis. I mean, employment tribunals at the first easiest stage, as an example. They're taking preliminary hearings a year from when they were the employment tribunal receives a complaint. 20 years ago, you'd have it done and dusted, the whole thing, within 6 months. Now we're looking at a year for a preliminary hearing. And I bet when you get near to that preliminary hearing, they'll send you out a letter at the last minute, like I had a couple of months ago. We haven't got the resources to deal with you. We'll be in touch soon. See you later.
Just on that, if people don't know what Judge is talking about, what happened from 2016 to 2018, you had to pay for a tribunal. A high court had ruled that didn't give you access to justice. So what that particular government who brought that in tried to rip up the Magna Carta even. That was ruled as unlawful. And now the tribunals, those previous tribunal judges have gone off. They've gone to be magistrates and do other things because they were sitting on their hands for 2 years because no one could afford the 250 quid. Now it's free. People are now, certainly within the M25, so I'm talking London. Now those tribunals are backed up to the hilt. They will not answer you till God knows whenever. Your case is pretty much a year in advance. That's if you're lucky. We are in a crisis employment wise. So we talk about a referendum that means absolutely nothing to someone who's been dismissed. It means nothing to him at all. He won't know anything. it won't affect him either in or out or shake it all about. He won't. When you're dismissed, then you have no course to access to justice. The idea is that you'll go off and get a job somewhere and withdraw your claim, or they'll try and starve you to do another job. So let's, if we're going to have a referendum, let's have a real referendum on real things and real things. I'm mad. Sorry, John, I'm going on because I get very angry because I'm involved in that business and it's annoying.
I think you're quite right to bring attention to stuff like this, and you can use, as far as I'm concerned, you can use this show to bring attention to it every week. If we have time this week, I want to talk about some of the experiences that EU nationals are going through already as well to add to that. But let's finish the first subject. The other thing I was going to say is that's a classic example of exactly what I'm talking about. A real issue that affects real working people's lives, which membership of or non-membership of the European Union has absolutely sod all impact on. It's not going to make any difference. What is going to make a difference is, like you say, being pushed around at work, being starved out of calling for justice, etc., etc. So, you know, seriously, people, wake the fuck up. This is the stuff that actually concerns your real life. And I completely agree that you need to bring as much highlight to that sort of situation as humanly possible. Anyway.
Well, I just feel that people who have been dismissed or are working in regions in the country that are pretty much poor, been left behind since the 80s, they felt isolated. And yeah, certainly during the 90s and under New Labour, who they, most people, it transpires, had no affinity with, bar John Prescott. People just wouldn't get him. They would just back away from anything working class or be seen, or, you know.
Yeah, well, that was part of the onslaught of the 80s and the further onslaught of the 90s and the cultural attack on working class ideas, values, cultures, identity, all of that stuff.
Yeah, so you'd have Nick Ferrari saying, well, that's not true because Tony Blair funded those areas just to get votes. The money went into those areas because he needed it. Go there. Go and see what like. It's horrible.
He did that. Well, I don't see the difference between that and the managed decline that Heseltine wanted to do on Liverpool and other parts of the country, particularly that, though. So I don't see the difference, really.
Well, I spoke to Jim today and I put a letter up by Geoffrey Howe in 1981 advising Mrs. Thatcher that we don't put any more money into Liverpool. It would be like pushing water uphill. And those people should suffer. And it's in writing. They've released that letter. But we're having a referendum on something that hasn't affected anyone. and it's US based. That referendum is US based to split our great society. The only proud thing I'm British about, if anything, is that we have the ability to welcome everyone and soak up other cultures. That's what we should be proud of.
Well, I've got a short article here. Once again, Private Eye, my Bible, in the back under the city. You might want to listen to this one, John. It mentions Brexit bad boy Aaron Banks has made a surprise catch as chairman of his Eldon Insurance Services broking business. So Mark Boleet was appointed chairman back in June. Boleet is the city's former political leader as chairman of the City of London's influential policy and resources committee. He warned in The Guardian in June last year about what a no-deal Brexit could mean for the city and financial services. He quoted a report by consultants Oliver Wyman suggesting an £18 billion a year hit in revenue, up to 35,000 jobs at risk and up to £5 billion a year in lost tax revenue, with knock-on effects in related industry of a further £18 billion in lost revenue, up to 40,000 more jobs gone and £5 billion a year in lost tax. Not exactly the party line for Banks, a leading funder of the Leave campaign. Maybe Sir Mark has changed his tune, it says in the article. But there you go. That's probably the closest that you'll get to reading the leaked Yellowhammer report. So there you have it. That's going to be the estimated knock-on effect of a no-deal Brexit, if, of course, it happens. I can't see any of it happening. I've said that for years. Brexit will never happen.
Yeah, but and also that I just think this is very telling that people cannot keep denying that all of this is just a very nasty game played by very rich boys with all of our lives.
Yes.
And those very same rich boys also happen to be, funnily enough, happen to be typical of their class in that they are full of hatred of ethnic minorities and gay people, etc. However, they also like to use, and I'll get onto this point now, they like to use the term traitors to describe the rest of us. Those of us who, you know, MPs who are doing their jobs properly, those of us who are scrutinising the work that they do, they wave a flag, they talk about Britain, which also hasn't actually never done anything for you. Waving a flag has never made the rent man disappear from your door, and it's never put food in your fridge, but either way. But I do want to say that one of the reasons I hate this language, because I don't really care what people call me, you can call me any name you want to, it doesn't concern me. As we know from experience, the kind of language we're hearing now of treachery and this sort of stuff does whip up violence. And it's being used against the left in general and Remainers or even anti-no-deal people in particular. Its frequent deployment is also the main reason at the moment for my ambivalent position in regards to violence towards Brexiteers and other far-right people. The Brexit Party MEP Martin Daubney, for instance, tweeted calling people traitors and talking of fighting to his dying breath, despite never actually fighting with any of his other breaths, to make Brexit, and that means no-deal Brexit, happen. He and many of his kind often talk like this, again, securing the knowledge that they will never actually have to back it up. Because, again, our society is not calling for them to actually back up the things that they say. I mean, another good example, it reminds me, Jim, because you mentioned Iran earlier, there was all of this hoo-ha for about 10 minutes about Jeremy Corbyn appearing on Press TV or something, which is Iranian-backed, and then someone pointed out all of the Conservatives, I think including Boris Johnson, who actually appeared on that channel at 1.2, and all of a sudden it went away. No one even followed it up.
That's right. That was over the Iranian shipping lanes, wasn't it? The Hormuz Straits. I mean, this Hormuz Straits in the Gulf has been. I can remember the USS Vincennes going through there and all that. The Armilla Patrol, blah blah blah. It's a convenient crisis that pops up when they need something in the news to go. Oh, look at the British Navy doing their bit. But the interesting part. All the British registered ships were only just that. They weren't crewed by any British nationals, because who would do the job for £1 an hour out there crewing a ship? They're from India and Pakistan the Far East. What the fear was the insurance companies. Lloyd's got the British Royal Navy out there, and the US Navy, and it was a good, shall we say, summer tea party. Oh, let's see what our latest missile can do. You know, well, we know what the latest missile can do because it went astray in the Atlantic a few years ago, and Theresa May didn't come clean about it, did she, until about 3 or 4 months later. And I think Private Eye revealed that particular incident. Look over here, look over there. Don't look at the 400 homeless people in Worthing. Don't look at Bognor Regis, the poverty that's on that seaside town. Don't look at, it's all about diversion, all the time, diversion, and then wave the patriotic flag when it's convenient.
Jim, I've always said, that people probably laugh at me, the media at the moment, the free media, because it's on its knees. They can't even give it away. Apparently, they're giving away this scum at the stations now. But they're on The View, these billionaire owners who don't live here, that own these papers, and they tell us, look over there, look, forget the fire on your doorstep. Look over there, look what's happening, you know, wherever. Sometimes they make up stories. Apparently, there's a non-judicial inquiry into fake news, you know. Who's that funded by?
Well, I've got a film that people need to watch on Netflix. It's called The Big Hack.
Oh, it's fantastic. Fantastic.
I've saved that, but I haven't watched it yet.
I'm not going to say too much then, John, but it's well worth a watch.
Thank God for Netflix.
Yeah, absolutely.
Otherwise, the BBC would show it 5 years later, and it would be on Channel 5 saying, remember 2018, that joke of a year in politics. Netflix is making it happen now.
Netflix is an evil corporation. Fuck those people. We hate them on this show. No I mean, we'll use their service, but no establishment love here. Thank you very much.
Well, I'd rather use, but to be honest, I mean, at least we have a choice with Netflix, with the BBC and that awful news that they got.
There was another film on there. I can't remember what it's called, but it was basically about the Panama Papers as well. That was on there.
Oh, I forgot the. I know that. Oh, it's fantastic,
that,
Judge. That was
brilliant.
Very well produced as well, actually.
Yes. As well as another film on there about that yuppie millionaire fraudster called Fire. That's worth a watch too. He's basically a con man, a very charming con man that developed and evolved a credit card for young people in New York, and then he went to the Bahamas and and tried to make out there was going to be a festival there and all the rest of it. I don't want to say too much, but that's on Netflix as well. But yeah, that's a jolly good watch. But The Big Hack, that goes into depth about Brexit and Donald Trump's campaign, and I won't say anymore. Listeners, if you're listening,
yeah, I think I must admit that the feedback from forums I've read on The Big Hack has been a real eye opener for a lot of people. Looking at the feedback, I've gone in the forums and people who would have this view on something, an uninformed view. Having read the forums afterwards, a lot of them are saying, what? You know, so when you get mediums like that, voluntary mediums that you have to, you say, well, I'll go into that and, at least it's not a forced medium, it's a voluntary medium. And they do seem to invest in a lot of this stuff, whether I like it or not. They do invest into things like the Panama Papers, The Big Hack. There was an interesting one they put there about the attack on trade unions throughout the world. I don't think the BBC would show it, personally. Channel 4 may. But yeah, as Judge Jim said, The Big Hack. Oh, fantastic.
Well, that's a nice opening there for me to steer us on to democracy. I just wanted to talk about what's happened this week. There's something else happened this week, is where Boris Johnson has said that any attempt or votes by the British Parliament to stop no deal would have been ignored by him, and any no confidence vote will not see him leave Downing Street. Now, that is a very interesting element to me, because that's where you are into coup territory. Ignoring the actual votes of, including one that says that you need to actually leave your position. That's the sort of shit that dictators do. There's a few true, very, very few truths that were ever told by the Leave campaign during the referendum, but one thing they claimed to be keen on was, as we were mentioned already this evening, the return of sovereignty and the control of the British Parliament, after waving lots of scare stories and falsehoods about the EU having more control than we did, etc., etc. Home Secretary Sajid Javid actually once tweeted that you do not get democracy by trashing Parliament or shutting it down. Interesting tweet there, Saj. I wonder if you've got any points on that. I think that's a very interesting situation to look at. I also have a great deal of concerns about us talking about allies, you know, against this whole thing, because your allies are not the Liberal Democrats. They have become, they were a charlatan party anyway, especially since 2010, but they're so blatantly obvious now, you simply can't rely. I don't think you can really rely on the SNP either, but that's a definite thing.
Most definitely not. You can't. Yeah. I've just seen something really funny on Twitter, and I've got to share this with you. And this is John McDonnell's in Parliament at the moment. he's saying, I believe the Right Honourable Member for Uxbridge is shouting at me. The last time he was shouting at someone, they had to call the police. So I don't think we need to go as far as that. Brilliant. I think democracy for the UK, I think we need a written constitution, John. It's thousands of years overdue. This genteel expectation since Oliver Cromwell and Charles I, II, and all the rest of it, it's changed. We need a written procedure, that's it. I mean, we've run around the world in the last 500 years telling people how to live, and you will live like this, and introducing constitutions onto them, or imposing constitutions onto them, I think we need something a bit more, quite possibly European or modern, that sets out the clear, you know, go left if this happens, or go right, go ahead, you know, click and go kind of thing for Parliament and the Prime Minister. I mean, it's a bit archaic that we're going to the Queen. I mean, I can tell you under administrative law, she's not actually allowed to say no, because it's all unwritten. It's convention. It goes around in a circle. I mean, convention has been changed when PMQs used to be two sets of 15 minutes, one on a Tuesday, one on a Thursday. And darling Tony came in and he changed that to one half an hour. You know, so that was a change in convention. I mean, it probably puts on a better show. That was when the Prime Minister was probably be thought to be more accountable. But we do need, I think, something that is going to be clear. The closest... trying to put a neutral political analyst's head on it, is the Fixed Parliaments Act. And it goes to show, even that doesn't work, because if this pre-2010, it would be quite glaringly obvious, Boris would have to say, right, that's it, general election. It may have even been Theresa May that had done it. But I think tactically for me right now, I think what Labour has to do is deny him the general election and keep him boxed in and let them fall apart, because the Conservative Party have done every working person and their families harm for the last 500 years. I mean, we moan about these right-wing thugs on the streets. I mean, they're nothing really to what this lot have done to us. And we need to make sure that they divulge themselves. Incidentally, John, I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot, you can tell there's an election in the air, because a lot of the old right-wing Twitter accounts and whatnot are all resurfacing again. I don't know if you've noticed that. And there's something going on. Anyway, I don't want to hog the airways. Back over to you two.
Yeah, I did happen to make a little note of that. Just quickly, I want to remember, so there's been a lot of protests going on in the street. Westminster has been nicely snarled up for pretty much most of the week. Again, much to my great shame, I haven't managed to get there yet, but I will get there by the weekend. I may even make the ultimate working class upstanding bloke's move tomorrow by skipping my yoga class in order to go to a protest. But it's for my back, all right? It's for my back. I've hurt my 20 years being a postman, all right? Not well, pretentious.
Nice. John, it's nice to know that some union reps have got a spine.
Hey! Is that a symbol I hear? Okay, but another thing is the general strike. So there's been suggestions about a general strike takes, but I just want to bring this up because I think we should discuss it very quickly. Challenging the government and reminding them, you know, basically who we are. I'm never averse to this, as probably most of you know, but it's also not the first time I've heard such a suggestion. In fact, this is about the 10,000th time I've heard this suggestion. There's some elements of the left that have called for this multiple times, and they've never actually got it. They call for it against wars, against stagnating wages, against the housing crisis, all completely justified, legitimate things to call actions against. And the motivation, political motivation for it, is sound, but it's never really given any amount of useful detail as to how it would take place, what the goals of this are.
John, I, if I may, sorry to intervene. The problem you've got for a general strike is the TUC. The TUC are the body that could quite easily, they could, not quite easily, that's probably not the right word, but are the authority to say, right, general strike. But they never have, not since the 1920s, I believe, have called for and got a general strike. If you talk to a lot of national officers of trade unions, thankfully our one is very pro-worker, pro-trade union. There's a lot of other unions that sit on that TUC that will look at you like if you've arrived from Mars. Yeah. What we consider basic representations for our members, and that's what we're up against. Basically, what we've got is unions full of plastic reps that are really managers, like Unite, for example, I mean, I've had some dealings with them on a personal note, and they're terrible. They're just what you're not even going to come down and do a grievance. Oh no, I can't make it. You're not going to rearrange your date. Oh no, absolutely woeful.
Shout out Unison on that one, because I happen to be dealing with someone's case right now, even though I don't really have the time, even though this said person is a Unison member. So mopping up your fucking problems there.
Yeah, again.
Anyway, look, if this particular general strike interests you, all I will say is there's a petition on 38 degrees, if you want to go and sign that, if that's what you feel. The dates they're calling for are the 1st and 2nd of October. Neither of those days is my rest day, so I'd be happy to get another day off that week. Happy to do that. Definitely like to cover it for the show.
As I said, John, it'd be great. It'd be nice if someone came on and said, look, we've had enough and we're just going to go. I've looked into the law. So I've looked into 3 or 4 different acts on industrial action. And I've yet to find anyone actually arrested or prosecuted, because it's very hard to do that. And people need to stop, you know, if it gets that bad, just go, you know, we don't have to wait for the TUC or whoever. The TUC is not going to back you anyway in a press statement. They're going to, repudiate.
Yeah.
They will do the legal thing of repudiate this industrial action.
The TUC are a governing body whose structure is often quite useful to us. Outside of that, I don't see a lot of purpose in them. I had another thing that, I mean, there is maybe a bit of a generational thing here, but I don't want to take a swipe at that. I don't think it's fair. But I did get a text this week that I just nearly, somewhere between laughing and spitting at, was, you know, all of these demonstrations are happening. Parliament Square was being occupied pretty much. And the possibility of it being fully occupied was definitely on the cards and still is. And I got this text from a rep who said, calling trade union reps in the area, let's have a meeting to discuss our tactics about going forward. I said, mate, the fucking tactics are taking place in the street right now. Why do you have to have a meeting? This is why people don't like you. I don't like meetings, okay? The amount of times there was like meetings scheduled, the amount of times I've not gone to some union-based meeting in a very hot room in the back end of Oxford.
Look, my view on...
Because I was going out and doing something. I was going out to, like, a homeless food distribution, or I was defending somebody in a case. Or actually, I was just going to see some mental band going nuts on stage and having a good time. And I don't regret any of those meetings I didn't go to, okay? And I'm a very dedicated union person. So what do you think that means for anyone with more life than me?
Well, there's an air of trade unionism being quite stuffy, run by over 55 white men.
55 stone.
I think kids, I think if we're going to reach out, and I'm a trade unionist through and through, but if I get laughed at dinner parties, you know, there's Arthur Scargill, they call me. A lot of people call me Arthur.
What the fuck are you doing going to dinner parties anyway? They're not
well, yeah, I'm being polite, you know, it's just piss up, I call it. So, okay. It's how we attract young people, and I think if we had a power committee, say, of people that said, let's employ people, and ask them about their social responsibilities, and how do they understand about poverty, meaningful employment, and all that stuff, and we would employ them on those qualities only. Rather than some sort of bloody gravy train. Because I'm telling you now, I know some good trade union reps that have been put on the scrap heap on the basis of people could have helped them, but didn't because of their financial situation. I think we've seriously got to look at reinvigorating trade unionism and try and make it as less stuffy as possible. Because I'll tell you what, I'm over 50 and I find it, but I want to kill myself at these meetings. It's just rubbish. And I'm thinking, how are we going to attract these young people?
Well, but also check out, I mean, you can't just attract, you have to learn from these people. Look at the people who have organised at Deliveroo and around Uber. Look at the people who, I've said it many times, United Voices of the World, organisations like that. I remember Stacey Clare, she was on talking about the Ethical Strippers, East London Strippers Collective. Her book, The Ethical Stripper, should be out soon, by the way. Go and buy it. Yeah, you know, these are people we need to... I don't just interview these people to give them some kind of advice. I'm interested in learning from them. And if I can help them with stuff that we've done before, I'll say, oh, yeah, we've got a method for that. Or,
well, I would say this about UVW. I mean, they're fantastic. I just think they lack bottles. I think the strippers... I think the strippers organisation have got bottle.
I've got something to say about UVW. I might upset a few people.
Oh, well, feel free. I think they lack bottle, personally, but...
Well, I think they're just a couple of rich kids running around playing trade unions, what I've seen of them.
Well, they're bloody good at it, though.
Well, they conduct job interviews and say, we'll get back to that individual and don't bother.
Okay, well, that I can't comment on. I'm just looking at the successful strike actions they've had.
Well, as trade unions, what you do is, and just to let people know, this is what we do. If I go in a meeting and represent someone, I come back to them, I give them the notes of the meeting, or I tell them what I spoke about, because trade unions are about transparency, and I want to let them know that we were talking about you.
Yes.
Unfortunately, that doesn't happen.
I feel the need to draw this to a close, because we've only got 3 minutes and I don't want to encroach on the good times, which I normally do.
Well, no, this is the good times as well, John.
It's about as good as it gets.
There's some people who are waiting to dance, so they're waiting for us to finish. Waiting to dance to the Soul Groove. with maybe a little dash of Run the Jewels to take them into that.
I'm going to play you out with Run the Jewels, John. Oh, no. Don't you worry. Right.
So what I'm going to do then, I'm just going to draw this to a conclusion. So just quickly, I wanted to talk about these constant insufferable comparisons to the Second World War and all that shit. I tell you what I'll do. I haven't got time for that, so I'll put that down as a bonus. And I will do that. I'll put that on my SoundCloud page. I will also, if I get the chance, bonus record something about the situation that EU nationals are being put in. And I will re-refer to that next week because I want to bring... I will re-refer to the situation of EU nationals and how they're being treated in this country.
Yeah,
repeatedly. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so just in conclusion to what I was talking about.
Well, just very quickly on that, John. I think in basic service industries... We're starting to notice a drop in service level of service because the people that naturally took up those jobs from the EU are simply not coming here anymore. The amount of places I've been, you can't get served, you can't get this, you can't get a cab, you can't get your pizza delivered, and people say, "Well, what's going on there?" And you say, "It's because of Brexit. They're not here. This is what you wanted."
Yeah.
You're absolutely right, Judge. You're spot on. Until it affects people, then people will realise, actually, I had a position to change something. I did it, and there's a consequence to that.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. No, these fuckers will never understand consequences. Even when it happens, they're too dumb. They're responsibility. They're too
it's all legal, Judge. Well, whatever, he's all right, is.
Responsibility is not a great British trait, let's be honest.
No.
Okay, so on the so I will talk about a particular case. I'm just going to flag this very, very quickly. Something that came up in the Metro, funnily enough, not somewhere I generally associate with good stories. Anna Ameto, she's a 55-year-old British citizen, married to a British man, has two British children. Parents came from Italy here in when she was the age of two. Has paid approximately £500,000 in taxes over her 4 decades of working in this country. She is now being given the runaround by the Home Office, told that she doesn't have the right paperwork, etc., etc. She sent £35 worth of postage paperwork to the Home Office, only to be told that she didn't have quite the right document for this reason, that reason, or the other. To be honest with you, and I will come back to this phrase, so it won't be the first time I say it, the paperwork doesn't matter. Whatever paperwork they ask her for, they're going to find something that she hasn't done, because that's what the real plan is here. Anyway, more of that in the bonus. SoundCloud, John Bowles, you'll find it there. Okay, in conclusion to tonight's main event, working out your allies and working out who your enemies are. There are frequent demos all over the country right now. We refuse to allow this overtaking of our democracy, whatever you want to call it, and shutting down by this Eton-based piss artist and his psychotic hard-right friends. And that's a great thing to be a part of. So go join those things. Paul Mason, the journalist, pointed out that Boris Johnson, the hard Brexiteers, have done what we could not. They've created a mass cross-party movement for democracy in Britain in the space of a few days. Well done. This is about a power grab. It's by one man, and he is a man who's deeply pathologically obsessed with his own position. Or as another journalist, Ash Sarkar, put it, 500,000 jobs are at risk from a no deal so that Boris Johnson can keep his. Brexiteers of all types have lost any confidence they ever had, and they know it, and we need to lean on them and beat the rest of it out of them. They are scared because they know that they are weak. We are the real rebellion. We are the real insurgency. Remember the poll tax, everybody, and let's crush this government. That is me in closing. Gentlemen, add whatever you would like, and out we go.
No, I'd just like to thank you both. It was written lightning on a fantastic week in politics and whatever you call it. I'll say politics. And for those who believe that they voted out and for the right reasons, totally respect that. Totally respect that. But right. It's not as easy as that, Judge.
I'd like to think. I'd like to thank my chief researcher, Gary Cooper. Thank you, John Bowd, for having me on. And Dave, thank you. Maybe. Who knows? See you next week.
Yeah.
Cheers. Good night.
Cheers, mate.
Take care. Cheers now.
Deep State defeated again. We got the airwaves.
All the Rage with John Bowd. On www.traxfm.org.